Just a note before we begin, there is some swearing at certain points in this podcast, so we wanted to let you know at the start in case that's a concern.
Claire, do you want farro or rice?
No, I would like a salad.
You can get rice in your salad if you want.
That's the point.
Mixed greens or shredded romaine?
Mixed greens, please.
Peppers and onions or sautéed corn?
Peppers and onions.
You can do both. You can try and do both.
I don't like corn.
Okay, I like corn. Chicken?
Chicken.
Welcome to the 538 Politics Podcast. I'm Galen Druk. Jody is out today, and apologies to anyone who missed us yesterday, but we were digging out of this early April snow.
I could have done the podcast, actually.
But hopefully it was worth the wait, because today we are introducing a new game, and it's called Guess What Americans Think! Exclamation point.
Working title.
Working title. Basically, I'm going to give the panel polling questions, and they will have to guess how Americans responded. The theme for the first installment of this is President Trump's strengths and weaknesses. There's been some debate in the press, and even
in
our office.
It's kind of like Family Feud.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, exactly. Maybe we should just call it 538 Family Feud.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
It's not good.
Are we team?
Claire's like, you're not my family.
No, it's just nonsensical. But continue.
Anyway, there's been some debate in the press and in our office about what Trump's strengths and weaknesses are, so we figured we would have a little fun figuring out what's what. Here with me, the contestants, I guess you can say, are Editor-in-Chief Nate Silver. How's it going?
Hello.
Hey.
That was good.
It was very good. You know, it's been a week or two. So
yeah, I know. I feel fresh.
Ready to go. All right. Senior politics writer, Clem Malone. Hey there.
Hi, Galen.
How's it going?
Good.
Fabulous.
It's going well.
Got to get that grammar right out of the gates. And politics editor Micah Cohen.
Hi, everybody.
Hey. So before we play that new game, I know we got you all excited. We are actually going to talk about something different, which is how we count Americans. So last week, the Commerce Department announced that it plans to add or reinstate a citizenship question to the census. You know, some of the talk has been about how it could affect who responds to the census or even how that information could be used. So we're going to get into that. But before we do, let me tell you that this week's podcast is brought to you by Blue Bottle Coffee. Nothing gets your morning going quite like that first cup of coffee. But not just any coffee. I'm talking about delicious, flavorful coffee that'll change the way that you look at coffee. There's coffee and then there's Blue Bottle Coffee. So what's the difference? For starters, Blue Bottle has an insane dedication to coffee. They search far and wide to secure exclusive relationships with independent growers all over the world to source only the most delicious and sustainable coffee there is. Your Blue Bottle Coffee is roasted and shipped to your home within 48 hours of placing your order, so the beans arrive at peak freshness. Worried about flavor? Don't be. Take Blue Bottle Coffee's Coffee Match Quiz to find the perfect coffee just for you. From blends to espressos to single origins, Blue Bottle Coffee has it all. Hurry to bluebottlecoffee.com/politics for $10 off your first coffee subscription order. That's bluebottlecoffee.com/politics. Again, bluebottlecoffee.com/politics. Okay, let's discuss the census citizenship question. There's been plenty of backlash, and Congress could still intervene if it wanted to. At least a dozen states, I think now 18, are in the process of suing. And I think the overarching question that we want to get at is this actually something that people should be freaking out about? And I think we'll get to that eventually. But to start, Nate, what data do we actually have about citizenship today? I mean, is this data that we lack?
There's data from the American Community Survey, which is sent to, I think, 3.5 million households every year. And that asks questions about citizenship. So you can make strong inferences from that data. We don't have an enumeration the way we do for other census characteristics. Although remember, the amount of data actually asked now on the census is pretty spare. You ask kind of race, gender, date of birth, marital status, you know, relationship, kind of living quarters. You know, we used to have a long form census where I think it was something like, I'm not an expert in this area, so readers can tell me if I'm wrong. But my understanding is that you used to have a long form census that was set to 1 in 6 Americans and that asked a very detailed battery of questions. And then 5 out of 6 got the kind of short form census.
And the American Community Survey is kind of meaning to replace that.
Yeah. So 2000s and the 2000s, after the 2000 census, the long form census was no more. And the American Community Survey replaced it. And that's sent to 3 million people on a continuous basis every year, 3 million households, so more than 3 million people, as opposed to 1 out of 6 every 10 years.
And it asks detailed questions about like income and things like that.
Very detailed questions. But, you know, it's fewer people have the burden of doing it. Response rates are still pretty high. And the nice thing is that you get data every year instead of having to just infer, right?
And we use that data a lot here.
Yeah. I mean, that data is more, it's probably relatively rare that we actually use census data per se, especially because we're almost 8 years now removed from the census. You know, it's all about the American Community Survey for the stuff that we're looking at pretty much. But there are various, you know, legal and constitutional requirements where you want as close as you can get to an enumeration of people. There are, of course, big debates about what happens if someone's hard to count. But yeah.
So do we know today how many citizens versus non-citizens we have in the country?
We have estimates, but like people are potentially prone to lie about their status or even misunderstand their status because it can be complicated.
Yeah. So I think a thing that I really wanted us to talk about before we get into the politicized part of this is I think people have been wondering and curious about like, well, does it matter if people actually fill out this question? How do they know it's going to depress response rates? And I just want to read something that Wilbur Ross said when he made this. This is Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross. He made this statement when he said, we're going to reinstate the citizenship test. And I think it kind of cuts to the heart of a lot of what people are talking about. He said, I find that the need for accurate citizenship data and the limited burden that the reinstatement of the citizenship question would impose outweighs fears about a potentially lower response rate. So what he's saying there is, listen, we're still going to get like okay responses and like I'm willing to take the risk in order to get this citizenship data count. And he also brought up, you know, the share of people who don't answer the citizenship question on the American Community Survey every year is between 11.6 and 12.3% of Hispanic respondents, for instance. So sometimes people don't answer this citizenship question, and which is a thing that a lot of people on Twitter were talking about and curious about. Okay, you get mailed the census questionnaire, right? Most people mail it back. But people go door to door, census takers go door to door if you haven't returned your questionnaire. And the preponderance of people who don't turn their forms back in happen in the rural American South and in sort of the border between the border states around Mexico and the United States. I think the implication being there that like the worry about depressed turnout comes if, okay, census takers from the U.S. government come to your door and you're like a Hispanic American who's maybe illegal. You might not answer the door for those census takers. That's kind of like the nitty gritty, I think, of cutting to what people are sort of worried about. I don't know if that was too tortured an explanation, but I think people are kind of confused about like what this actually means. And it spins really quickly into the politicized everything.
Well,
but
I think it's hard to separate the two.
Sure. But I do think that like the actual nitty gritty of like how the census is done is a thing people actually don't think that much about. And like why it would be if someone physically shows up at your door to ask you a question about your citizenship.
Disconcerting.
That's disconcerting. Yeah. And I think that that's where a lot of people, I saw this confusion on my Twitter feed when I tweeted out that first night that they were adding the question. People were like, well, just don't answer the question. And I wanted to be clear about that from the top, is that like, you don't mail back your response form. Okay, then a census person is supposed to come to your door and say, hey, I'm going to ask you these questions in person so we can get an accurate count because it's constitutionally required for us to do this.
So the reason I say that's important because I think these are hard to separate. So
yeah,
the reason people are worried about this question, lowering response rates, is not because this question is sort of evil in the abstract or on its own. It's because of the climate in which it's being added.
And so the logistics of census
taking, that's
which
right.
is why I think it's important to lay out.
And, you know, the census itself released a report. I don't know if they released it last year or this year, but it was of these studies and focus groups last year in which they saw what they themselves characterized as like a really weird and unusual uptick in people not answering their questions and people aborting interviews and people, you know.
Let me insert something here. The Census Bureau did an analysis and it said that among non-citizens whose responses to census questions about their citizenship status could be matched with other government records about them, about 30% erroneously said they were citizens. This is from a Pew Research report, just kind of like an explainer about the census. So about 30% of people who weren't citizens were lying and saying...
Which is a lot.
Which is a lot.
And the Wilbur Ross statement you read is sort of nonsensical in the sense that he's like, you know, the limited impact. Well, you don't know what the impact is.
Which isn't... Yeah, I mean, it's quite a... I think a lot of people have been saying this, but it's quite a risk to take with a once every 10 years survey that determines appropriation of resources and representation in the United States. Like, that's not a risk that a lot of people would be willing to take, including bureaucrats at the census who've worked there for decades.
Nate, in terms of crafting a good survey, I mean, is there anything that the census should or could be doing to ensure that this doesn't affect response rates or that they're asking the question in a good way?
I mean, you could reassure people in the language this will not be used in any way other than just to create a count that's used for various constitutional purposes.
And those kind of campaigns, they found, have worked in the past.
I mean, look, there's an issue overall about, like,
have helped.
Obviously, having a citizenship question ups the ante a bit. There's an issue overall where if you're illegally here or unauthorized diddly here, whatever euphemism you want to use, right? You know, there's an issue about, like, do you want to interact with the government bureaucracy in any way, shape, or form whatsoever? And this might kind of up the ante for that. You have kind of a contrary issue where, you know, it might increase the awareness in communities that, hey, look, we need to make sure that we're counted. So it's kind of like can become like a war is, I guess, too strong an analogy, but like it could be a kind of ground level skirmish where on the one hand, you know, maybe people are afraid of identifying themselves. On the other hand, people in their communities say, no, you have to be identified because otherwise we will get less government funding to support programs that could benefit our community. And so, you know, so you will have a push and pull. In general, it's a little bit comparable to like laws about voter ID. Sometimes those laws not backfire per se, but they wind up increasing awareness in the community about the importance of having proper ID and or turning out to vote, and where they get voters worried that like our vote's being suppressed, which is a big motivating factor. And so, you know, it's not quite as straightforward what effect this will have necessarily. But look, I mean, I have to be honest, I find a little bit of the outrage about this kind of not that persuasive.
Go on.
Well, I think citizenship is a pretty reasonable thing for a census to ask. Citizenship, for example, is used in a question to determine congressional redistricting because of the Voting Rights Act. It says that, you know, it's based on a count of voting age citizens. And so it actually is kind of relevant to some statutes in federal law. It's not a ridiculous thing, I think, to ask about citizenship status in a national census.
Can I ask you something, though? So it's I agree with you that it's maybe not unreasonable. But if the point of the census is to count every single person who's living in the United States, not just
right.
citizens.
But the focus is
let me finish.
Yeah.
Is that in our political climate, is it a bit purposefully blind to say, okay, well, it doesn't matter. We should just ask the citizenship question anyway. Is the risk too great to say, like, this will lead to a inaccurate count of all the citizens in the United States? I mean, because I saw someone making the point earlier, which is like the whole screwed up thing about black people being 3/5 of a person comes from like census, you know, that's the way that like the census appropriated counting slaves in the South. They were 3/5 of a person, according to account. They were not citizens. And it was always the point of America to, even in its most screwed up way, to account for everyone in a, I mean, it's screwy to say this, but like in whatever the, you know, the accurate kind of way was. I wonder if you're not being a bit too purposely blind to the political climate that might lead to an inaccurate count.
Look, it's a reasonable question to ask. You also, I think, I mean, the right approach to me is say, okay, sure, we can ask about citizenship. We're also going to go out of our way to, number one, make sure that people know this information will not be used in a, like, you know, Gestapo-like fashion. And number two, that we really are going to make sure we have to count everyone, even if we have to kind of impute incomplete information from people who don't want to provide more information.
So you would say, like, okay, the census should do, like, a pretty hardcore media campaign to say, listen, we're not going to use this stuff, blah, blah. I kind of agree with you on
abstract. Which it might not do.
Because, this is where I get to the point of the Census Bureau has actually been a starved agency financially for many years in a way that's kind of problematic now. I mean, some of the testing for the 2020 census has had to be cut back because they didn't have enough funds. So while that might be, Nate, I agree, like a good idea in abstract, like we're not going to, this is completely, you know, bus advertisements, subway advertisements, whatever, we're not going to use this data. for any ill harm to you, to me, it's not realistic because this is already a cash-strapped agency.
Yeah, and look, I agree that in the abstract, a citizenship question is totally reasonable, but it's the voter ID comparison, I don't think quite works, but does work in this one respect in the sense of like coverage of those voter ID laws that sort of put aside intent, the partisan intent of many of them, are sort of naive to the point of useless, right? And so adding this question on its own might not be that bad, but in this political climate, in and put it adjacent to the other shit Trump has done, even if they do this campaign, even if they did a campaign, it wouldn't work. So it's sort of like, I'm not sure how useful it is to say.
But again, people in communities have an incentive to have themselves counted. Right?
But do people know that?
Yes, they will, because people have intelligent conversations about this.
Yeah, I don't think that. They do, but the risk of being deported, of being separated from your family, is so extreme.
Okay, then you shouldn't fill out the census at all. But the citizenship question, I think, might be a lot more marginal than people are thinking in terms of the impact.
In terms of adding risk.
Like, it wouldn't shock me if there had been no change to the census procedure at all that you had decline in participation from...
Anyway.
From, you mean, people who are here illegally.
Yeah, but it's like a weird debate where I think, like, yeah, you can kind of argue, like, forest for the trees a little bit, but, like, people are kind of debating the intent or the implication when on its face... I mean, yeah, sometimes there can be an argument where, yeah, on its face, it's reasonable to ask this, but blah, 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 the context is bad. Okay, but, like, that's conceding a lot, and you kind of read all these hot takes. They often are conceding that first point, and, like, that's a lot to concede. I mean, that makes your take lukewarm at best.
See, I don't think it's a lot to concede. It's a fine question on its
own. To say it's a useful question that's important in enforcing the Voting Rights Act and other things.
Sure. That has deep and troubling consequences in this moment.
Okay, then the Census Bureau has to kick ass in terms of making sure they actually count people.
Right, but they won't be able to because they don't have any money.
Then that's the issue you should debate. And they did get a little bit more funding than I think people were fearing or worrying about in the budget.
But this goes to, Galen, the piece you wrote, which is about, okay, put response rates aside for a second. This actually gets to a more fundamental debate about how our democracy works. So explain that.
Right.
I can take over hosting duties for a second.
Right. First of all, response rates do affect how our representative democracy works in a way because apportionment is based on response rates. But there's a way that congressional representation could potentially change regardless of response rates. And that's based on this like legal argument over whether districts within states should be drawn according to who is eligible to vote or just who is in that state, period. So essentially, the way that redistricting happens today is all congressional districts have to have the same number of people, period. And it doesn't matter whether or not they can vote. So today, we include non-citizens who can't vote, whether they're here legally or not, children who obviously can't vote until they turn 18 and are no longer children, prisoners, and convicted felons, depending on where they live, right? So different districts, depending on the makeup of those districts, will have different amounts of eligible voters. The argument against this way of doing it is that people who live in districts with large numbers of ineligible voters, this is generally areas where there are large numbers of non-citizens, which happen to be more urban areas, have undue political influence, right? Because there are fewer eligible voters, each one of their votes counts more than people who live in areas with lots of eligible voters and say no non-citizens or whatever. The argument in favor of continuing to do it the way that we do it now, you know, based on all people, regardless of eligibility to vote, is that each representative is then responsible for the same amount of people when it comes to policy, constituent services, things like that.
And moving to a system where you're using the eligible voter population to determine district size would shift political power to the right.
Right.
Because areas with large numbers of ineligible voters tend to be bluer areas overall.
Interesting constitutional question.
It's an interesting debate.
I've thought on it, but I will save it for off air.
So this has already been before the Supreme Court once in a case where plaintiffs in Texas tried to force all states to redistrict according to eligible voting population. And the Supreme Court unanimously said, no, we're not going to force people to do that. But what they haven't decided is whether or not they can do it. And so once this citizenship data is available,
they'll be able to do
They'll be able to do it, especially more easily, right? Every municipality, every state in the country that gets that census data when they're ready to redistrict is going to have the citizenship data readily available. They're also going to have ages. And if they want to redistrict either a municipality or even a state, if they want to redistrict according to the citizen voter age population, they can. The information's right there.
It just seems unconstitutional to me because you're...
To not count some people.
Yes. I mean, you know, women used to not be counted as citizens, right? Like, felons are still people who pay taxes. And, yeah. You know, to me, there you get into a lot of hairy situations where it's just like, how is that constitutional? That's my... It's not a hot take. It's just like, I don't quite see the logic in that. But, I mean, I do see the logic in it. I just don't see how it is constitutional.
Nate, what do you think?
I mean, there is, like, pretty wide variation in how many people actually vote from district to district. I, for unrelated reasons, was looking at this recently. The number of presidential votes in the Texas 33 congressional district, which is a majority Hispanic district, was about 130,000. By comparison, the largest district is Montana, although it's a whole state. If you ignore that, though, the Colorado 2nd district is 470,000 people voted.
That's a big difference.
Yeah. I think people don't realize kind of how big that difference is, and that has to do with a lot of reasons, including it's not just people who are here illegally or unauthorizedly. It's also people who are legal immigrants here. And also Hispanic communities tend to have low voter turnout, even among people who are able to vote and who are citizens, too. And so, you know, so there are lots of factors that come in here. But look, again, the Constitution says you're supposed to count every person.
What was the biblical census? What were the constraints of the biblical census taking? You know, in Jesus's, so Jesus's family has to go to Bethlehem to be counted in was that a count of all citizens of the Roman realm? Would slaves be counted? Get at me, Twitter users. I'd like to know that and not Google it.
So I don't think it's crazy to say that people who are not legally in the country shouldn't be considered for purposes of government funding. The problem is that the census doesn't actually ask that. It asks about citizenship, and there are lots of people who, of course, are green card holders, for example, who are here legally. And I do think if we invite someone to be here legally or let them be here legally, then they should be counted, right? I'm not sure about people who aren't here legally, but that census wouldn't let you answer that question anyway. It's not a count of illegal or unauthorized immigrants.
Why don't they ask the green card question? That's interesting. On the citizenship question.
This gets to why I think adding the census question has sparked such a heated debate, because it does. Okay, so you have the decennial census, which only asks like these really basic questions. And it's really meant for like the basic count of who's in this country, as opposed to the ACS, where you get into more detail and you can be a little more, you know, statistically savvy about inferring stuff. And so any change you're making to the decennial census, you're kind of saying this is a fundamental piece of information relevant to how our democracy functions. And I think that's why it sparked this kind of heated argument.
Sorry, I'm Googling the Roman census.
If I want to be super trollish.
You do, yes.
I could say, why are you asking about race on the census?
I don't have an answer to that. Well, I do have an answer to that. Race has been a... incredibly important factor in throughout American history.
I found the biblical passage I was looking for. Now it came about in these days that a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that a census be taken of all the inhabited earth, which I interpret to be everyone.
That's a broad... Yeah.
But it's a broad language, but this was the first sentence taken while Quirinius was governor of Syria, and all were proceeding to register for the census, everyone to his own city.
All right, so Caesar Augustus would not support moving to a just eligible voter system of democracy.
No,
I mean, he was also an emperor, so I don't think that people voted.
But he wants to know. I mean, but he also wants to know the population of his conquered lands, right? You want to know how many Hibernians you have in Ireland, right?
we're really getting far
afield. This is interesting.
To wrap up our conversation, the Trump administration said, the Department of Commerce and the Department of Justice said, this is in order to better enforce the Voting Rights Act. Do we accept that at face value? Do you think there are political motivations or any other motivations to do this? And given all that, do we think this is fair, or is the freak out legitimate?
We might differ here.
I mean, it's not... I think there are better hills to die on. I'll put it like that, right? I think restrictions on voting eligibility and people's ability to cast votes. I think that's a issue where the kind of right thing to do is much more clear cut, for example. I mean, I don't know the intent. I mean, I'm sure it's a Trump administration, right? I'm sure I can infer their intent. But
we do know that. Come on.
Okay, what would you infer if you were one to infer?
I mean, I don't know. They probably think that this is like a way to like troll immigrants or a little bit, right? And like make things more difficult. But there are, but they, you know, but intent is whatever. I mean, their argument is actually not that bad. And
intent,
like, why is it
whatever? I'm sure that's something that lawyers have often said.
Why is it my, I mean, it's not that complicated an issue, right? Again, if their intent is bad, then judge them by the degree to which they're serious about the census actually trying to count everyone, right? But it is not crazy to ask about citizenship. Even if it's one of the only 10 or 12 things that you ask about, that might be in the top 10 or 12 most relevant things when a government is counting people. Like, are they citizens or not? Like, I just, what I would say is all the lawsuits and stuff like that and all the energy, that should be kind of focused on making sure that people are trying to get an accurate count and that immigrants understand that participating in the census will not result in their being deported or otherwise being at legal risk.
So say the census goes out and you don't see the Trump administration or the Commerce Department make a big effort to get everyone counted. Then do you freak out?
Well, they might not make that effort anyway. I just think the citizenship question is like much more marginal than people. You know, there are issues with the census that are profound issues in a climate like this one, right?
But
I think like at the margin, like I think this is like kind of freak out versus not freak out.
And here's where I'm going to butt in and say, you know, this is a thing that former heads of the census, that census watchers, you know, often people who are, again, former bureaucrats in the census have said, this is a dangerous way to play with stats. Now, maybe, Nate, ultimately it doesn't require a freak out, but I do actually disagree with you that there's attention that should be paid. And as a reporter, I trust it when experts in this area say, this is a veering from the norm. This is something that hasn't been done. We haven't tested it properly. Why is it being rolled out only a couple months in advance when preparations for the census take years and years and years? So I will trust the experts as a reporter and say, maybe ultimately, yeah, it doesn't affect the response rate. But I do think that the attention being paid to it right now is perfectly justified and something that people should know about. I mean, it's a constitutionally mandated provision that,
again,
that
I
you
only
get to
have,
do this count, and that if there are questions over the count, people should be aware of it.
I only have one point here, which I keep repeating over and over again, which is that like it's not a crazy thing to ask. It's a pretty reasonable thing to ask.
I don't think anyone's disagreeing with
you. Work with that constraint to make sure that given that reasonable question is added to the consensus, that like we get as complete and accurate a count as possible and that people do not feel like they're put in legal jeopardy by participating in the census.
So the fact that it's a reasonable question to ask does not mean it's a super important question to ask, nor that it's so important that it outweighs the risks of asking it.
Then why do a census at all?
That's what's the
no,
name
it's not.
Of that fallacy when you slippery slope it?
But the arguments you're making, like if you ask about race, that probably is a deterrent to some people participating. Marital status.
This isn't an abstract.
Yeah, exactly. It's not in the abstract.
We're having this conversation in the context of an administration that has made all sorts of false claims about voters and voting fraud. In the context of an administration that has done all sorts of stuff to crack down on immigration and make people worried, and an administration that has done all sorts of funny stuff with the census.
So should we remove Hispanic ancestry as a category from the census too?
That is not the same thing.
It's not, and I would err on the side of not making any changes to the census.
A lot of the Trump administration's policies have been racially driven and not just driven against immigrants.
I would err on the side of not making any changes to the census, because anything you change will be wrapped up in – like I worry about, frankly, all this hand-wringing about adding this question, which I agree with, probably is going to make people less likely
to fill it out anyway.
Right. It adds to the problem. So
not if people are more aware of like the fact that it's important for representation, though.
Well, I think politicizing the census in general in any way is very problematic. close the segment. Move on.
All right. That is a wrap. We are going to have to wait until 2020 to get answers to that debate.
But I'm right.
But I'm
So let's move on to the game that we discussed at the top of the show, Guess What Americans Think, or 538 Family Feud.
It's not called Family Feud.
Wait, why?
But before we do that, this week's podcast is brought to you by WordPress. You've mastered your field, grown your business, and are ready to share your expertise. You know you can deliver. Now tell your audience. Make it easy to stand out, reach new customers, and build your credibility online when you build your website on WordPress.com. You don't need experience with code or design. WordPress.com provides all the tools you need to get your site up and running. Their customer support is there to help 24/7. That's Monday through Friday and the weekends. They have e-commerce site options ranging from a simple, effective buy button to a complete online store. Plans start at just $4 a month and include a custom domain so you can get your site name exactly the way you want it. When you're ready to expand your business's online reach, WordPress makes it easy with built-in SEO, social sharing, and specialized plugins to meet your needs. Nearly 30% of all websites run on WordPress. Build your brand online with the same tools that some of the world's biggest companies and publishers use to power their sites. Use WordPress. Start building your website today. Go to wordpress.com/politics for 15% off any new plan purchase. That's wordpress.com/politics for 15% off your brand new website. Again, wordpress.com/politics. This week's podcast is also brought to you by Kronos. No one compliments you when their paycheck is correct, but make one mistake and you risk alienating your entire workforce. With Kronos, you make sure your payroll is done right the first time, from punch to paycheck. HR, payroll, talent, and timekeeping in one unified system, all with a proven implementation approach and simplified, transparent pricing. And when it comes to regulations, it's harder than ever for businesses to keep up with today's evolving alphabet soup of regulations. MLA, FLSA, ACA, EEOC. What's a company to do? Kronos. With Kronos, you can minimize compliance risk and track HR policies, making sure they're applied consistently and fairly. Learn more at Kronos.com. That's K-R-O-N-O-S. Kronos.com. Workforce innovation that works. Okay, let's try out this new game, 538 Family Feud, Guess What Americans Think. Do you have any other more catchy titles, or are we just going to stick with 538 Family Feud?
How about Trivial
Pursuit? Family Feud!
How about Trivial Pursuit America Edition? No,
okay.
I have no good
Well,
ideas.
We'll put out a Twitter poll, and the universe can decide.
Non-Trivial Pursuit.
Okay, so like I said, the theme of our first installment is Trump strengths and weaknesses. We saw a piece... Micah, you saw a piece in New York Magazine by Jonathan Chait arguing that corruption, not Russia, is Trump's greatest political liability. So we want to dig into that. What do Americans actually think about different aspects of the Trump administration? So here's how it's going to work, you guys. I am going to give you a poll question, and you are going to guess how Americans feel about it. We'll go around the table in a clockwise fashion, beginning with a new person each time, and whoever gets closest to the result wins.
We have to give a percentage?
Yes.
Don't we need like some music for this or something? Like, let me...
Can you maybe like sing a little song or
I mean,
something?
I'm not going to sing, no. But like, let's get the...
You just do a TikTok.
Scene here.
That's good. That works.
It's a tic-tac-toe theme. Tic-tac-doe.
And close. So... Do you think you should be allowed to go over the number, or do you have to be under the number in order to get
closest? No, just closest.
You can go
just
over.
Closest.
Yeah.
You can go over. Okay. One caveat for Nate before this becomes an issue. We do not have averages of the polling results for these questions. We're just going to have to go with the poll that I have on hand, and
this
I apologize if
okay,
you don't agree with the poll response.
We're just polls of likely voters or all American
Let me
bring
up another concern. Do I get a buffer if I go first? I feel like I should get a buffer around
We're
my percentage.
We're just going to rotate
Is
who goes
snake
first.
Draft?
So you go first, then Claire goes first, then
okay,
I go
Okay, but
first.
The first person's always screwed. Okay, go ahead.
Is this a snake draft?
And so, okay, these are divided up into themes based on Trump strengths and weaknesses. And the first theme is ethics/corruption. Gets to the meat of the article that Micah, we discussed. So, first question. Nate, what percentage of Americans say President Trump is honest?
In which poll?
Oh my God.
Just nope.
What?
You guys have to.
You have to
just answer it.
35%.
Okay. Claire?
Is honest?
Mm hmm.
28.
Oh, fuck. 34%.
And Nate has it. 38% of Americans say he is honest, according to Quinnipiac. 57% say he is not honest. So that is.
See, I was going by a Marist poll that I'd seen.
Yeah.
1 point for Nate. Okay. Next question, Claire. What percentage of Americans think that most or all of the officials in the office of the president are corrupt? And here's a hint. 38% think all.
Hint?
Yeah.
What do you mean hint?
I mean, I think, you know, I think it's just to give you. So this is not like
cabinets?
A normal polling question. So I thought I'd give you a hint to give you some perspective. 38% think that all or most of Congress is corrupt.
And this is asking, this is basically asking about cabinet positions.
Yeah.
38% that think of Congress is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go 35.
Micah?
43.
Nate?
Nate, stop Googling.
I'm not Googling shit. 49.
And that goes to Micah. It is 44%, according to
Bam!
Transparency International. That number was 38% at the end of Obama's last term.
See, I was thinking that because like everyone hates Congress, but I was like, well, maybe if you're a Trump partisan, then you think his government isn't corrupt.
Well, almost. Well, okay, Micah.
Yes.
Here we go. What percentage
22.
Of Americans think Trump should release his tax returns?
Oh.
Sticking with 22?
No. 78%.
Up there. Okay, Nate.
71%.
Do you guys have something I don't know?
Many things.
Fuck you. should release his tax returns?
Should release his tax returns.
58%.
It's Nate. It is 67% say that he should release his tax returns, according to Quinnipiac.
Booing, by the way, is underrated. People should boo. If you go to a sporting event, boo more.
I'm predictably the worst at this game.
Nate, that should be the title of your next book. Boo more.
Boo more. Okay, do we want to stick with ethics and corruption, or do we want to move on to Russia?
Let's move on.
Okay.
Russia.
Nate's winning with 2. I've won. Claire is...
0.
You've always been a fourth quarter player, though.
And just remember <bold. laughs> that you want to keep in mind maybe some of the responses so that you can make a judgment at the end of the game about Trump's weaknesses.
And I forget everything after I've said
Galen,
it.
Galen, you're saying we should use other information we have for context?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, if you want.
That's good advice.
Moving on to the Russia section of the game, Nate. What percentage of Americans think the Russia investigation is a, quote, serious matter, as opposed to, quote, an effort to discredit Trump?
55.
Claire?
59%.
Shit. I think I actually know the answer to this. 58%?
It's 58%.
Wait, what? Come on. I cannot get a break here.
So we did a podcast on this, and I looked at the polls, and I remembered this.
So close.
This blows.
Claire was one off and lost.
Fucking hate you guys. Any other people, I'd be winning.
Yeah, you would have won that one.
Okay, we are at Nate 2, Micah 2, Claire. Yet to get a point, but your opportunity right here. What percentage of Americans believe the Trump campaign coordinated with the Russian government to interfere in the 2016 campaign?
You know this, don't you, Micah?
I don't know this one.
45%.
I'd say like 37%.
Can you repeat the question, please?
Oh, my God.
Coordinated with the Russian.
That's cheating.
Can I have the language of origin, please?
What percentage of Americans believe the Trump campaign coordinated with the Russian government to interfere in the 2016 campaign?
Can you use that in a sentence?
Nate, if you don't answer the following question.
43.
And it goes to Claire.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
It is 50%, according to Quinnipiac.
Oh, wow. That's high.
40% say no. That is pretty high.
That is high.
All right. Third and final question in the Russia segment. CNN.
I love this game, by the way.
This goes to Micah. CNN/SSRS asked respondents about how important 7 issues are to their vote in Congress this year: gun policy, the Russia investigation, the economy, sexual harassment, taxes, healthcare, and immigration. Where did the Russia investigation place? So anybody who gets this right can get a point.
Where they placed, not what percentage said Russia.
Does closest count here if no one gets it?
No. Yeah.
Wait, why not?
He's the fucking host.
He made the
okay,
rules.
Okay. Can you list the options again, please?
Okay. Where does it rank amongst gun policy, the Russia investigation, the economy, sexual harassment, taxes, healthcare, and immigration?
I'm going to say it ranks fifth.
Fourth.
It ranked last. 45% wow. say it is extremely very important to their vote.
That?
Wait, so that's sixth?
Seventh. Seven. It's seventh.
Who pulled that?
I think I should get a point for that. I was closest.
No, we...
arguably. That was CNN pulled that.
What?
And so it was 45% say it is extremely or very important to their vote. Second last in sixth place, sexual harassment, with 64% saying it was extremely or very important to their vote. So
that's important.
Russia investigation, last.
Yeah, nobody gives a shit.
Okay, we are now...
Can I just say that it's actually not that important? Because if Mueller comes out with like a blockbuster finding, then a lot of people are all of a sudden going to think it's really important.
When was that question asked?
It was March. It was like middle of March. Okay. So here's where the score stands. It is Nate with 2, Claire with 1, Micah with 2. There
really
were no points for that last question there.
Okay.
And we are now moving on to the policy section of this game. Question number 1 to you, Nate. What percentage of Americans approve of how Trump is handling the economy?
50.
I know dead air isn't good for podcasts.
It's not.
It can be edited out, though.
Fifty-five.
49.
And it goes to Micah. It is 48% approval.
Oh, you... I'm good at this game.
That is up from 44% around the time that the tax law was passed. And to give some perspective, 38% approve of how Trump is handling foreign trade. So it is now Micah with 3, Nate with 2, Claire with 1.
And that's the game, everybody.
Consistent.
All right. Next question to you, Claire. What percentage of Americans approve of how Trump is handling immigration?
42. No, wait.
You can't take it back. No, yeah, you can.
You can take it back.
No, I'm just going to stick with it. Whatever. I'm going to get it wrong.
37. That's what Nate was going to pick.
Fuck. I think we might just have to put a disclaimer at the top of this podcast that there's a lot of swearing.
38.
Okay, so we have 38, Nate, 42, Claire.
37, Micah.
And Micah gets it. It is 36%.
I mean, what is up with you, man?
He probably looked at the prep doc. You cannot put this shit in the...
It's not in the...
Did you cheat?
The answers are not in the prep doc, so okay. He could not
did
see the answers.
Did you cheat by reading polls?
I cheated by following the news.
I mean,
Micah likes to relax on a Friday night by taking a long bath and reading poll numbers. Yeah.
First of all...
Lighting candles.
I don't like candles.
Sounds lovely. Okay, final question in the policy section is to Micah. What percentage of Americans approve of how Trump is handling healthcare?
All right, the answer was 36 on immigration. So I will say 35.
34.
35.
I can name that tune and...
And it goes to Nate. It is 33% approve.
That's Ooh-hoo. Such bullshit.
60% disapprove.
I had to think. I had to like...
All right.
Divine.
It is now tied between Nate and Micah with 3 points. Claire, 1 point.
But
Claire,
still consistent.
Claire's on my team, so we're winning.
Listen, I don't want any pity here. I am losing all of my
it's
own.
It's not pity. I want the points.
It actually lowers your average down the head.
We're moving on from the policy segment of this game and moving into the behavior segment.
I'm going to be the UMBC of this game.
I feel like this might be your topic, though.
Behavior?
Yeah.
Nate, what percentage of Americans say President Trump is a strong person?
Physically strong?
Yeah, what's that mean?
The poll did not clarify.
Strong
what a strong
or strong
question.
And decisive? Because sometimes decisive is put with just
no,
strong.
It just said strong.
Micah, do you think you're... Sorry, I need to know.
54.
This is tough.
57.
Shit.
Fuck. Totally screwed. 54 and 57 are picked. Crap. Sheesh.
Jeez. I don't know whether to go above or below. 58.
You stole Claire's opportunity. It's 62%. 62% of Americans say that President Trump is a strong person.
That's higher than I would think. 62 is high.
It is, and it's a decline from 74% when he was elected. So, yeah, Micah.
He hasn't been
working. We should,
out.
Actually, is like Wink Martindale still alive? Remember him from game shows? We should get like an actual game show host.
Drew Carey.
Caitlin's doing a fine job there. Okay. There's no reason to impugn.
Look at that shade. I mean, I guess this game show can host itself.
Yeah, really? Jeez. Mark Summers, Double Dare.
Okay, we are at Micah. You have 4 points. Nate, you have 3 points. Claire with one.
We still are beating the scores.
Claire. What percentage of Americans say that Trump's personal life matters to them?
48%.
Micah?
57%.
Nate?
47%.
And it goes to Claire. It is 52%, according to a CNN poll.
Fudge.
All right. Moving on up. Nate, Claire's almost caught you.
My only goal now is to beat
Nate. Oh, it would make me so happy.
I have a few left in this category, but we're only going to do one more. So do you want to do Trump's tweeting, his intelligence, or his mental stability?
Stability.
Tweeting.
I'm with stability.
Mental, okay. Two against one. Micah, are you looking at the answers on my screen?
No, I swear I wasn't.
Oh my God, no wonder. No,
I like how we've all accused each other of
cheating. Yeah, you have to throw out that question. You have to use a different.
No. Oh my God. I can't even see. I can't see.
Do you know
here.
What I never want to play with you guys? Any other game.
Yeah.
Board games,
first
parlor
of all,
games.
Accusing someone of cheating is like, that's part of the game.
Nate, were you a trash talker in sports?
Wait, I did not have the basis on which to talk trash. I'll talk trash in
poker.
Miniature golf a little bit.
I'm really good at miniature golf.
Poker.
Let's go play on the piers.
You can't talk trash in poker, really. You're
not supposed to talk.
You just give like shady face. Okay.
Read the question.
Here's the question. What percentage of Americans think President Trump is mentally stable?
Good question.
Micah, to you first.
What percentage of think Trump is mentally stable? Jeez. I don't know.
You want to ask the random number generator?
Let me see it.
It suggests 23.
No, I'm going to say 51%.
All right, Nate. What percentage of Americans think President Trump is mentally stable?
Is mentally stable?
Is.
40%.
That's too low.
What did you say, Micah?
51.
47.
And it goes to Claire. 45%, according to Quinnipiac.
That's
come
right.
back.
I ate my rally pie.
Didn't Micah say you were a fourth quarter comeback kind of person?
I did. Right. I know Claire well.
I'm scrappy.
And that is 47% say that he is not stable.
That is crazy, by the way. 47% think the president is not mentally stable.
I was kind of offline a lot this weekend, but just to this thing's like the theater of the absurd questions or like stories that get written lately. I opened up my phone or whatever, and there was a story that said, like, breaking, like, Trump's campaign ordered supplies off of Amazon. And I was like, no shit, Sherlock. Anyway, continue.
Okay, so here's the score going into our final section of the game. We have Nate with 3, Claire with 3, Micah with 4.
You nervous?
All right, and there are two questions in this final segment, and they're each worth 2. Is that what we said?
Two questions, each worth 2. The theme is overall perceptions.
So this is really, the game is anyone's to win or lose now.
All right, Nate. What percentage of Americans think Congress should begin impeachment proceedings?
Against who?
That's the dumbest thing I've ever said.
When they stall for time,
exactly,
they're nervous.
I don't know, but if you can guess, I'll give you a point.
Trump.
I was kidding.
Go, Nate, guess. 41.
37.
And what did Nate say?
41. 41.
I think I might actually go between you guys. 40%.
Micah takes it. It's 39%.
I'm so fucking good at this game.
Oh, my God.
Jesus.
All right. And for
so
some...
he has an insurmountable freaking lead.
Yeah, he does.
You could tie
I win.
Oh, no.
No, he can't.
You can't tie
all right,
it.
Fine. Look, last question is worth 3 points.
Okay, fine.
Okay.
See, and the you get more listeners, you see the pity I'm taking on these people?
And just for some perspective...
I can't believe you went in between. And I mean, it's so rare. It's like a 7-10 split in bowling or something like that.
I look at these numbers, guys. This is like part of my job.
La-dee-da.
Humble brag.
La-dee-da.
No, I'm just saying.
I'm just saying.
Okay.
And for some context, that is down from 43% last May. So fewer Americans now think that
it's always the people
impeached.
That you never suspect of cheating that act like they're a good guy.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
I'm going to let you guys pick here. Do you want the final question to be a choice between Pence or Trump for president or percentage of Americans who think Trump will win re-election in 2020?
Ooh.
Let's do 2020, I think.
All right. 2020. Claire, the question is yours. What percentage of Americans think Trump will win re-election in 2020?
Well, Galen, I would have to say that that number is 47%.
Bad answer. The answer is 37%.
38%.
The tweener.
And it goes to Nate. It is 40%. 40% of Americans think that Trump will win re-election in 2020.
Nate just went between our two answers. He's not making a big deal out of that one.
That was a big gap. That was a big gap. He could drive a semi-truck through
those. All right, so that was worth 2 points, right? That's what we said.
Three.
I don't want to cheat to win.
Okay. We said it was worth 3 points, which would mean you two are tied, but if we stick with two points, it means Micah wins.
And Claire, listeners, Claire is giving us the finger right now.
I don't know what you're talking about.
So, to give you a little bit of perspective there, because we do want this game to mean something. So, of course, 40% say that Trump will win re-election. 54% say that he will lose. That's according to a CNN poll. And in 1995, only 25% of Americans thought that Clinton would win re-election.
So this question is actually usually a pretty good indicator, but not 3 years before the election.
I was going with like a bunch of like disaffected liberals will also think he's going to win re-election. That was my reasoning.
Oh, that's interesting because they're so despondent.
Yeah. They think.
Yeah, I think, can we insert some substantive commentary here?
Yeah.
I don't think that's right, and I think people are going to be incredibly disappointed.
That was to me, by the way, listeners.
No, I mean, I think people are counting their eggs in the Democratic Party a little bit early on the midterms and kind of think that's way more in the bag than it is. I think there's going to be like mass despondency.
That's my point.
If Democrats don't win the House.
That was my point.
But there's
No. He's saying that their liberals are assuming Trump
are
will
cocky.
Lose.
They're right, cocky exactly right now.
But can we return to the original question?
Yeah.
So given all those numbers,
where do Trump's strengths and weaknesses lie?
Yeah.
And we talked about, so we'll review the themes. We talked about ethics/corruption.
I mean, I hear his bench press is pretty good.
We talked about policy.
A lot of upper body strength.
Behavior. And then overall perceptions. And then within policy, we talked about the economy, immigration, North Korea.
Strength, right? His strength is his strength. Or his people's perception of his maverickness, you know, like out of the box. And that falls in the category of strength.
Well, but his numbers on behavior were pretty bad, too. But I think the point.
Wait, aren't we saying what's good?
Both. So it's a strength and it's a double-edged sword, if you will. No, but the Russian numbers are interesting, that the Russian numbers are so low. But again, I think that's one of the things. Nate made this point on a show a while ago that, like, it's nonlinear. It's, you know, when Mueller comes back with something, then it either will or won't be something, most likely.
Yeah. I mean, within the issues, healthcare scored really poorly. For Trump.
Economy
as well.
Strength, at least so far. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, keep in mind, like, by the way, the whole critique that, Trump's approval rating never moves, that's been way more true this year than it was last year. Last year, healthcare was the one thing, along with firing Comey, that really did reliably seem to impact his numbers. And so we're going to have a Slack chat that I think touches on some of the same topics. Good tie-in.
Spending a lot of time together today.
Good tie-in.
I know.
The food is arriving soon, though. So, anyway.
That does it.
I guess that's a good...
What a way. It's probably our best podcast ending, I think, ever.
Well, I mean, and of course, we can play this game again. We can continue to track these things. Micah, congratulations.
Thank you. I'm the inaugural winner. Do I get anything?
Cold comfort, Micah.
Okay, well, with that, we will end this show, this game show, 538 Family Feud. Nate, thank you so much for playing along. Second place.
Yeah, how's that feel, Nate? Second place, Nate.
I like second place, Nate. It's kind of rhyme.
That does.
All right,
not really.
We'll stick. Take it, Claire.
Last place, Claire.
I prefer to go long con Malone.
There you go.
Yeah.
And Micah, first place. You feel pretty good.
It feels very good.
We'll have to think of a prize. I don't know.
Maybe the person who wins gets to pick lunch.
Oh, I like that.
That's pretty high stakes.
All
actually.
Right, I pick launch for next week's Slack chat.
Well, with that, my name is Galen Druk. Tony Chow is in the control room. You can get in touch by emailing us at podcasts@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with questions or comments. If you're a fan of the show, leave us a rating or a review in the Apple Podcast Store. When you leave a rating, it helps our rankings, which helps others discover the show. Or just tell someone about us. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you soon.